Welcome to the MS Dev Show, episode number 176. This week we talk with Jeff Bertok about progressive web apps, how to stay competitive when other developers have over 20 years of TypeScript experience, and Carl commits to a life of bacon and bacon shakes.
This episode of the MS Dev Show is brought to you by Espose, the market leader of .NET and Java APIs for file business formats. Natively work with DocX, XSLX, PPT, PDF, MSG, MPP, image formats, and many more. Raygun gives you complete visibility on errors, crashes, and performance problems affecting your end users. Replicate issues in seconds rather than digging through log files or having to rely on users to report errors or crashes. Raygun gives you a window into how users are really experiencing your software applications. Check it out today at raygun.com.
This week we have Jeff Bertok, Principal Program Manager in the Windows Group and Web App Advocate. How's it going, Jeff?
Going great. Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Yeah, welcome back to the show.
Yes, my second time. Second time?
I think it's the second time. So you get some kind of special second timer award or something. Just talk to Carl. He just drops swag everywhere. So speaking of Carl, what's going on, Carl?
Not a whole lot. I actually just got back from some traveling. So
really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
Actually, I did know that. So what do we have for the comment of the week?
The comment of the week we actually got from Justin Thomas on Slack. He had just reached out after we got done recording the episode where Raygun, we had the Raygun contest about the worst bugs you've seen. He's like, oh, is it too late to get it in because I've got one? So I figured, you know, hey, you know, it's too late for the Raygun contest, but it's not too late to win something from Espose. Mm-hmm. So he had actually found a kernel bug in Windows, and they admitted it was a bug, and they actually never fixed it, but put a warning on a web page, and it's actually still out there. He says, you know, it has to do with like processing HTTP headers, and it's kind of arcane. I don't want to go into the details because reading random header tags on a podcast doesn't sound entertaining to me, but it is a really cool story. So once we finally fix our Slack, I know we can't get new people in there right now. You guys can all check it out and read it for yourselves.
Yeah. Well, Jeff can give us a live update on that bug. Jeff?
Justin, headers are now being replaced.
Yeah. We're no longer using headers.
Yeah right. Exactly. It's all queries.
It's
string.
Hitting the outer circle.
Yeah, but it's not the web. No, I'm just totally kidding.
Yeah. Okay. But if you want to get mentioned on this show like Justin, send us an email to feedback@msdevshow.com, comment on Facebook, YouTube, or Stitcher. We really like those 5-star iTunes reviews or anywhere else you can get a hold of us.
Yes, we do. Okay, so let's jump into the news.
Speaking of iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes won't be in the Microsoft Store this year. What?
Yeah, so at Build, we announced that iTunes would be centennialized and put into the Windows Store.
Mm-hmm. And the giveaway for Build was flying pigs.
No, that's, I mean,
that's
this year.
That's how surprising, you know, this was to everybody. And I look forward to it because I am looking forward to it because it's kind of a way to, in my mind, kind of quarantine iTunes and not have to run that archaic installer that they have. So next year it'll be out. Hopefully.
Next year is what we know.
Okay, so all we know is that it's not this year. Okay.
Not this year.
Okay. Microsoft adds open SSH support to PowerShell. What?
Yeah. And I think it's already in the Fall Creators update as well. Okay. So, you know, everybody who, you know, OpenSSH is a great tool that a lot of people, you know, add through external programs. And now it's just there. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say it's about time.
Yeah. And you could always go into like I shouldn't say always. I mean, in the recent history, you could go to the Windows subsystem for Linux and also use these tools. So that was a different way, but it's nice just to see this being more pervasive throughout the OS. So very cool.
Yeah. So now tools like PuTTY are going to not be downloaded nearly as much once everybody learns how to use it.
Woohoo. Okay. The state of JavaScript 2017.
Yeah. I don't know exactly who put this on, but there's, you know, one of those kind of questionnaires that gets sent out to developers about, you know, in this particular one, it's JavaScript developers about, you know, what's the latest and greatest. And we always really like seeing these results, and sometimes there's some really cool nuggets in here. So, you know, just first and foremost on kind of like the first page, you know, there's multiple different like flavors of JavaScript. There's like plain JavaScript, there's ES6, there's TypeScript, Flow, Elm, so on and so forth. And by far ES6 is, the winner of the survey. So that's not really too surprising. Yeah. People wanting to stay on the latest and greatest of the normal stuff. So,
well, and you don't really have a choice in like your browser, right? I mean, you just, it is what it is. I guess, oh, I suppose this is also backend as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, you know, and developers like to write in their version of JavaScript and then count on a transpiler to work it down to the version for that.
That's true. That's a good point.
So they're probably thinking more about like, hey, well, what do developers like to write in? And then, of course, they just rely on the tooling to make sure that it gets transpiled to the something the browser will understand.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. TypeScript is a big one in here, which is great. It's good to see 8,000 people who have used it before and would use it again. So that's pretty cool. And actually, that's actually a great example of I've used it before and would not use it again. The numbers are very low for TypeScript, which is what I figured. Like it's once you try out TypeScript, it's tough to go back. Every once in a while, I still have to write in JavaScript, but I sure love TypeScript. But what kind of blew my mind in this is whenever you get into some of these other sections. So first of all, this website.
The front end.
Yeah, this website is really difficult to use. I don't know, or interpret or read. I don't know what it is about this site. But yeah, I mean, I was looking in here and they have, you know, usage, who's used the various technologies like React and Angular. Those ones are big, obviously. Some of these were a little bit surprising to me, like Vue.js. Was pretty significant. I mean, there was actually a big category of I've used it and would use it again.
And bigger than Angular too.
Yeah. Barely. But they're all sort of tied. But actually, you know, that's kind of interesting too, because there was Angular 1 and then it seems like there's a bit of a split there, right? You know, there's people that are just like, oh, well, you know, I don't know if I'd use Angular 2, and then Vue comes along and people are like, oh, I should use that. So, you know, there's just more things for people to rally around. So it ends up splitting up the community a little bit. A scale of 1 to 5, how happy are developers with the current state of front-end tools? 3.8. Interesting.
Can always be better.
Yeah.
So I think one of the most interesting ones, if you go all the way down to the other tools section, the third chart down for text editors, essentially what is the newest text editor is first by a long shot, VS Code.
What section was that under?
Other tools.
Other tools. Okay. And then I have to screen. Yeah, this is so weird how this is categorized. Text at VS. Whoa.
So VS Code is what, two years old right now?
It's just dominating.
And everything else on there is way older. You have Atom and Sublime Text, and then you have like WebStorm, Vim, Emacs, Notepad++.
Now, what we talked about on the show, though, is there's always the survey fallacy, right? Because, you know, 100 people, 100% of people surveyed, you know, took the survey, you know, so there's like bias like already in there. One thing that I find a little hard to believe is that Atom actually has a lot higher number than Sublime Text. That seems kind of surprising to me. But like you said, VS Code, I mean, is like double both of them. Which is pretty wild. Vim is actually a decent contender there as well. Actually, I wonder with Atom and Sublime Text though if there's kind of a splitting of the audience there. And then we were laughing about this earlier because I think what we were looking at front end tools or no, it was back end. And let's see here, isn't there where was the one that had oh you go under you go under back end and they go under developers and you can look at the salaries. And then if you scroll down, you see the number of years of experience. And let's see here. Okay, so it wasn't back end. So it's front end, then click on developers, and then look at the number of years of experience. Backbone. So 7% of backbone of users have had more than 20 years of experience. 6% of Aurelia users have more than 20 years of experience. Is nobody questioning these numbers? I don't understand this. These frameworks are not that old. Vue. Angular 2.
So there's obviously some fudging of the numbers, at least by, you know, the people who have taken this, but you know, I do think there's certain trends you can see about that with some of these.
Yeah. I think it's most useful whenever you're trying to pick a new technology or switch careers or something like that, for sure. Anything else you wanted to highlight in there?
No, just check out the show notes and look at this for yourself.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So let's talk to Jeff, because we want to talk about progressive web apps. So I guess let's just start with what the heck are they? Like, I've heard about them.
Yeah.
But what are they?
Well, you know, in the web development world, they're kind of the next step, you could say, in application development. You know, we've been, as web developers, we've been building apps out of JavaScript and HTML for years. And you may even say 20 plus years.
I knew you'd say that.
So, you know, like, we use things like Cordova to do packaged apps. I mean, even when we released Windows 8, we had a packaged application. And, you know, there's been Ionic, there's been Chrome apps, there was Firefox apps for a season. And, you know, so we've kind of been moving in this direction where we've needed some standardization in that space. Well, in the Windows side, with Windows 10, we introduced hosted web apps, mm-hmm. which was basically the idea that you can leave your content hosted on the server and use it to build a store application. Well, at around the same time, you know, Google was starting to build an app structure as well. Mozilla was out there looking for what the next thing was from the Firefox apps. We were working on this spec called the W3C manifest, mm-hmm. that was supposed to standardize a bunch of the metadata about the applications. And so we started discussing, like, hey, if we're all trying to build a solution that helps web developers build applications from web content, we should work together. And if any way possible, build something that runs everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's what progressive web apps is. So it is it's web content that can progress to be an application in certain scenarios without leaving the web aspect of that application behind.
All right. So you said progress. So is this like a scale of features where we can start from like very minimal, just add one tiny thing to kind of everything else?
Yeah. So the idea with the progressive aspect of it, you know, you're probably familiar with progressive enhancement, mm-hmm. you know, a development process where you can say, hey, we want to make sure that your code works, delivers functionality in a base scenario. You know, progressive enhancement, and Aaron Gustafson, who's on my team at Microsoft here as well, talked about this for years, where a page should work without JavaScript, right? And then as you use that page in environments where more features are supported, the app should take advantage of more features. Well, progressive web apps is the same way. If you're viewing that app in a browser, it should behave like a browser application. It should not. It should be functional, right? You should be able to deliver your base functionality. But depending on the environment that you're in, it should be able to take advantage. It should be able to progress to take advantage of more and more features up to the point that it is an application. All right. So, depending on the platform that you're using this on, a progressive web app is going to have different feature sets that you can take advantage of. One of the base new standards that comes along with progressive web apps is that of service workers. Well, service workers is a technology that basically allows you to add a proxy JavaScript file to your website that helps you to control the traffic of your site. And you can imagine when you can control the traffic of your site, now you're able to make sure that your files are running offline. You're able to handle poor network conditions. You're able to do some extreme amount of caching to speed up your site. So in an environment where a service worker is supported, like on an Android phone device, your Progressive Web App should be able to take advantage of that service worker. However, it shouldn't ever depend on it to function. Okay? Now, on the Windows side of things, we already had a hosted web app platform that gave web developers an environment for bringing their applications into a store app in, scenario where they had access to all of the Windows APIs. They were in like a trusted environment, right? And so then they could access all those APIs. They removed memory storage caps for those type of applications and basically said, hey, you're an app developer now. You can, you know, do whatever you want. If you want to ever access hardware, you can do that. So on Windows, Progressive Web Apps will build on top of what we already have for hosted web apps. So you'll have access to APIs on Windows that you don't have access to when you're running a Progressive Web App on Android. However, I wouldn't be surprised if they start adding that type of thing to Android. There seems to be some indications out there that that's the direction they're going as well.
Don't wait for users to report problems. Raygun gives you complete visibility on errors, crashes, and performance problems affecting your end users. Replicate issues in seconds rather than digging through log files or having to rely on users to report errors or crashes. Raygun gives you a window into how users are really experiencing your software applications, supports all major programming languages and platforms, and integrates with your current development workflow tools too. There's a free 14-day trial, and it takes minutes to implement. So start resolving issues in your application and check it out today at raygun.com.
So like, who invented this? When I searched for PWA, I got a whole bunch of different explanations of the acronym, but then I did see Progressive Web Apps, and it looked, I mean, Google made it look like it was their thing. Is it, did they invent this?
Well, I'm going to say no.
Okay.
But that it's with a caveat because
have they sort of branded it?
We've had hosted web apps. That's kind of the brand that we were going with.
Yeah, and you've been early doing that on, for years. I mean, that was
Windows 10.
Yeah, I mean, that was surprising. Was I know you've been sort of doing this type of thing for years and years and years, and now it just seems like, you know, like the next iteration of it.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you a story about that. Mm-hmm. That's kind of fun that leads into this. So let's see here. It was in IE11. See, I don't really know years. Mm-hmm. I know versions of IE as a point of reference for the past.
Yep.
So during the IE11 timeframe, I was at a conference. It was actually called the Edge Conference. Edge. And I first met Alex Russell there from Google. And he actually is a big player in getting Progressive Web Apps started in the Google space. He and I did not really get along. We had some very public disagreements during one of the forums. And then afterwards, you know, I was like, I need to talk to this guy because, you know, he's driving me crazy, but I think he actually is kind of akin to the way I'm thinking. And at the time, I had started working on a project on my own called the Web App Template.
Yep.
And that was in Windows 8.1. So in that time frame where you could basically do this same type of thing. You could take your website and turn it into a store app. And at that time, it was called the Web App Template because it was a Visual Studio template that you would install. And then you'd have a configuration file. Mm-hmm. Which, as it would have it, was based off of the W3C manifest. What is today the W3C manifest was the standard that I was using for web app templates. So I was working on this. Well, and then Alex shared with me the same, very similar type of approach that he was working with inside of Google. And he didn't really have a name for it at that point, but he was saying, you know, like it has to work offline, has to be network independent, it has to be linkable, it has to have a scope. And so we had a beer and it was a very loud bar and we were drawing out diagrams, trying to challenge each other, you know, as to what these different, you know, these different platforms should contain. And then we kind of went our separate ways. We've kept in contact ever since, but you know, he went back to Google and we started hearing work about them trying to figure out what came after Chrome Apps, right? Because they didn't feel like Chrome Apps was the right direction. They were building something that was going to be better, was really going to have a way to control your network traffic. They very early latched on to the term progressive web apps. Frankly, if you ask Alex, it was not him who invented that term. It happened elsewhere, but Google very quickly latched onto it. We went with the term hosted web apps because it was kind of a progression of our packaged web apps. And so we were saying hosted web apps. They were saying progressive web apps. Well, at this point, whenever we come to a point of conversion, where the stuff that Alex was working on 5 years ago and the stuff that I was working on 5 years ago has actually come to a head and become very much the same thing, we knew we had to settle on a name. And we felt like the term progressive web apps was a better term for the standard than hosted web apps. We think hosted web apps had some connotations with it because of the way that Google had used it with their Chrome applications that made it feel more like a bookmark than an application. Although we don't think that's how Windows developers looked at it. So we said, yeah, absolutely. Let's go with a unified term of progressive web apps to make it clear to developers that this is based off of standards. So they should be able to write it once and write it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, we have service workers in Windows where just now delivering service workers without a flag into the Windows Insiders builds. We're pushing that towards RS4. We have a W3C manifest support out there, which is another component of service workers. That has support in Chrome on Android. It has support in Firefox on Android and Firefox on iOS, and it has support on Windows through the PWA builder, where we can actually take the W3C manifest and use it to convert an appex. So we're really kind of to that place where now you're building one manifest. You're using the same cross-platform website, and you're adding a cross-platform service worker to it to control, your offline content, and you've got one app that's running everywhere.
All right, so let's slow down a little bit because I think you blew by like a bunch of really cool things really quickly there, and I just want to make sure I understand all this. So first of all, you know, we started this discussion. You know, Microsoft was doing one thing, Google is doing another, but with service workers and manifests, these are the two concrete things we can look to right now. So I'm looking at the Mozilla documentation on manifests. So looking right here, I mean, it has like names, colors, icons. This looks like stuff that would that a store needs in order to like register it. And then you like immediately followed that up with I can't remember the exact word, but essentially like an appex converter. So like, what do you have or what did you really mean by that? So there's technology out there that can just take this manifest, something that might have other progressive web app features like service workers, and turn this into something that I can put into the store?
Yes. Okay. Good question. So from a Windows perspective, we thought about like, hey, we looked and saw what Google was doing a few years ago, and they were basically running progressive web apps from the browser. It was something that ran inside the browser. And mm-hmm. technically it still is on most platforms, but they've kind of moved to a model very similar to our hosted web app, the app container model. But at any rate, we're looking at that. We're like, you know, they're running in the browser. We looked at the kind of the user base on Windows and said, you know, users know what a website is and they know what a store app is. Do we really want to introduce a third category? You know, this kind of half app, half website thing.
It's a convertible.
It's like a convertible. It's a two in one. And we decided, no, that we think the right way to go, at least to start, is to make things websites or make them apps. So from that point, we decided progressive web apps will be in the store. Okay. Now, we laid out our vision for this earlier this year at the EdgeConf, where we said, you know, eventually when, or I shouldn't say eventually, because it's something that's happening. The end goal is to have Bing out there discovering the manifest. Bing actually is already discovering the manifest. They're finding all of this, the manifest out there. They're finding which sites have service workers on them. They're finding which sites are accessible and which ones are performant, all that type of data. So we want to be able to take that data and use it to auto-ingest the PWAs into the store.
What? Okay,
so Bing discovers the PWAs into the store. Now, during this time right now, when that is not a reality for most developers, you have to take your manifest and turn it into an Apex to put the Apex in the store. Mm. Very much like if you're on Android now and you want to put your PWA in the Android store, you have to get a web APK or whatever they renamed that to. Okay. So at any rate, the tool that's going to help you do that is the PWA Builder. Okay, so pwabuilder.com, it's a program that was started by Microsoft. I myself am a core contributor. We have some really amazing people working on it. We're actually right now converting the website to TypeScript, so we're pretty excited about that.
Awesome.
And Vue.js, yes.
Yeah. I hope all your devs have at least 20 years of experience in TypeScript.
20 plus is our requirement. Yeah, we don't take anything less than that. So at any rate, right now you can actually go and go there to create a manifest. You can go there to get some starter service workers. And then at the end, you can download packages and create Apexes that submit right to the store or, you know, code to side load. So we're trying to just remove the barriers during this period so that web developers can easily get those PWAs into the store. Now, remember, we're in RS3, you know, we're in the fall creators update space. So in the public builds, service workers are not on by default. In the Windows Insider builds, they are now starting to be turned on. So your service worker in an RS3 space isn't going to work inside of the application.
Okay.
But it's coming.
So you've made it kind of clear what the goal for Microsoft is to get PWAs. So does Google have a similar vision of indexing sites that have manifests and getting them into the Google Play Store?
You know, I'll settle for kind of clear. It's like Friday. It's the last day of work for me before I take off to the holidays. If I'm even partially clear, I think that we're doing amazing. All right. So I'd love to speak to Google's goals. I don't think they consider me an authorized spokesperson, but we have had many discussions and they've shared data about the rate that people install progressive web apps and then the re-engagement that they get from that. But they've also shared that they're taking what they've done on Chrome OS and replacing it with PWAs. So reading between the lines, they're not going to have Chrome apps anymore. The app structure is very big, especially in EDU. So I'm guessing they'll have either some sort of listing for their PWAs specifically. And let's be realistic. A store is just a listing, right? It's a search engine. Just like we put all of the listings for our apps inside of Bing search results, we could easily just, you know, filter it down to be PWAs. So I'm not sure if they're going to be doing that and through that listing or if they're going to be putting it all, like the only channel will be through the Play Store. They have talked about being able to generate your web APKs at some point soon, which we want to incorporate into PWA Builder as well, but generate those web APKs, which will go into the Play Store. So yeah, for Google, it'll be an option. Whether it'll be the only channel for that type of listing discovery or not, I'm not sure.
Okay. So will this or could this replace native apps? I mean, kind of across the board, or is that just kind of a silly question?
No, it's a good question because I hear that a lot. People saying, oh, well, that's the end of native apps. And that's not the case at all. Like I don't see any version of the future where the store applications go away in progressive web apps any more than the last 20 years we've seen websites overtake native applications or native applications or mobile apps overtake websites. There's clearly a space in the world for both of them. What we've seen when you look at what do native apps do really well? Like if you look at mobile apps, they get really good re-engagement. Right? Someone installs an application, they use it more than they do a website. Websites get a lot of traffic. So the idea with the progressive web app where you can try to have kind of best of both worlds gives your website an opportunity to be in that scenario where it gets higher engagement.
You were cutting out there, Jeff, sorry.
Yeah, all right. I just comparing it to native though.
Yeah.
I would not. There's always gonna be a place for native. If there's not a place for native, then you're doing it wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Because native is always gonna be more performant. It's always gonna have access to deeper level, APIs, and so, games productivity. There's tons of categories out there that are going to be native and. If we take away a channel for that native, then I think users will suffer. So I anticipate seeing these things live side by side in years to come. I don't think users are going to really care if they're using a PWA or if they're using a native app. I think they're just going to want really good functionality.
So speaking of living side by side, if I have a web app for my website, is there any relationship between the two? Does one kind of flow into the other? Can they be different or can one just kind of flow into the other?
Well, I'll give you my take on that because we're kind of looking to see what developers are doing in that space because there are options. Chrome and I believe Firefox as well will give you a little banner that's mm-hmm. that automatically drops down if you have a manifest and says, hey, you can install me. There's the idea of related applications in the manifest where you can say, hey, I prefer that you use the PWA or I prefer that you use the mobile app than you do or I prefer you use the website. So there's that type of thing as well. But I think that developers will mostly give options for their users to continue to use it in the browser or to upgrade to an app. Frankly, from an app perspective, I think if you are just doing the exact same thing you are in the browser and doing it in the app, I don't think your users will be super excited about your app. Like you kind of want to give them a reason to install it. So sometimes you even just see a different landing experience making a big difference. On the web, our homepages tend to be marketing driven and kind of try to sell that first time visitor. That's not really what users expect when they open an application. If it looks like a marketing page, you think they're going to be disappointed. So, give them a persistent login, give them a drop into a landing page that gets them right into whatever they're trying to do on your site. So even things like that make a big difference. And then, of course, take advantage of service workers. Take advantage of unlimited storage. Take advantage of API access that you don't have in the browser. Mm-hmm. And I think that will make the users want to use the app over the website.
Yeah, this is really interesting because we have a website for the podcast. Yeah. And I was just thinking, it could be a progressive web app, but I would probably design it completely different, but now it kind of has me questioning the entire design of our website and that it might, the website itself might be designed wrong. So I'm not even sure, if I would want those to be the same or different. It kind of feels like I'd want them to be the same because I have the same goals in that particular case. But you know, I think our site is not really, when I think about a good mobile experience, it's definitely not the way it's laid out right now. Because whenever you think about a podcast app, you usually think about, here is a list of like recent episodes, and it kind of tries to get you like, you know, hey, which one of these do you want to listen to? And it's funny because our website is designed totally different. It's always, here are the show notes on the latest episode. You know, it's a completely different goal.
Yeah.
So maybe we need to redesign our website and then actually, you know, kind of think through the progressive web app at the same time.
Yeah. You know, Twitter recently released the beta for their PWA recently, as in the spring. Mm-hmm. You know, they released the beta for their PWA, and they called it Twitter Lite. Okay. And so they started moving traffic from the mobile Twitter into that. And if you, and you know, we did this at Build, we kind of took a side by side of the Twitter Android app and the Twitter progressive web app. And, you know, honestly, the experience is almost identical between the two. Mm-hmm. You know, it really was geared towards giving that re-engagement, easy re-engagement experience to that. Now, if you take that same app, though, and you move it over to a progressive web app that's geared towards a desktop or a tablet, mm-hmm. I think it's going to lack. So, you know, like you need to make sure. And now one of the things is Twitter actually.
Still there, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm
we
here.
We just lost you for a second. It's okay. Yeah. It'll be, your voice will still be in there in the final cut. So you're fine.
Yeah, I'm recording in this sense.
Yep.
So. Yeah. So, you know, Twitter does engage in responsive design, you know, to make sure that it works well on like a desktop PC or a tablet screen, not just a mobile. So they do those type of things. But, you know, like when I think about like Twitter, what I'd be really excited to use the Twitter PWA for are things like on my desktop that I want to do, like watch video, you know, like, and have that be able to run in an application. You know, like if Twitter did some NFL games this year, and it was like, wow, this is actually really cool. First of all, I'm a cord cutter, so I don't have regular access, but they gave me access to the games, but then it's like I'm watching it like in a tweet.
Right.
It's like I don't actually want to do that on a mobile device. I want to do that on a bigger screen, you know. I want to watch it on on my tablet, on my Surface. Yeah. So you know, things like that, being able to take advantage of that bigger screen, I think is what's going to make the difference between successful PWAs on Windows and ones that aren't as successful.
Yeah. What about iOS? Are they supported on iOS? Because I went to pwa.rocks, and I was like all excited about PWAs. And then I pushed the button, you know, to pin it to the desktop. And then I went, and it was just kind of the ugly version of the icon. It didn't look like a PWA.
So, you know, we don't really get a lot of info from Apple about what their plans are.
I'm shocked.
But there's clear indications that they're moving that direction. And I've heard the same thing from folks at Google, that they're excited about what Apple's done. Okay. We've seen Apple send some representatives to some of our PWA talks and stuff. So that's good. We also know that they're implementing service workers into Safari at this point. I have no idea what the end product is going to look like on iOS. Yeah, you're right. They don't have any support for, they don't support Manifest. They don't support service workers. You know, they don't have a lot of those things today. We know they're working on at least some of that. I do think that they're going to be supporting the same experience that we saw on other platforms. I don't know whether it's going to end up in the store for them or if they're going to want to have a different discovery experience. It's hard to tell.
Okay. And then I have a specific question for you. When I am in essentially app mode, which actually probably isn't even a good way of thinking of things, but if I'm installed as an app, do I have to worry about things like cores? You know, because like if you're in a website, then you have to worry about cores, right? I go try to request some random resource and it's like, no, you didn't have your pre-flight headers or whatever. And it's such a huge pain. And that's one of the nice things in an app is you can just go out there and start like pinging websites or doing whatever. So how does that work in a PWA?
Well, So your PWA, you can think of it really as kind of a standalone window to your browser. Mm-hmm. All right. So you're going to be, you have a domain. It's going to be the domain of that site.
Yeah.
So your domain rules, just like you have limited with cores and things.
That's not the right answer.
Well, I can give you a consolation prize though.
Okay.
On Windows, we do have access to the networking stack through the WinRT APIs. So if you have that experience on Windows, we do have a way for you to work around that and get app-like, HTTP request. It just isn't something you'll get across all the different platforms.
Okay.
Espose offers a powerful set of file management APIs with which developers can create applications, which can create, open, edit, and save the majority of popular business file formats. Their product range supports a multitude of file formats, including Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint presentations, PDF documents, OneNote, Outlook, Project, Visio files, popular image formats, and many others. Espose produces APIs for .NET, Java, and the cloud, which can be utilized in almost any modern language available today. Visit www.espose.com for a free 30-day no-limitations trial. And if you get stuck, message the friendly support team for help. All technical support is offered free of charge. Remember, if you're a lucky winner, you will receive a free developer small business license for espose.words for .NET, a powerful toolkit to work with Word documents in your applications.
So one of the things I was kind of playing around with is I went to the PWA builder site and I typed in msdevshow.com and all of a sudden I realized that it pulled in like all this rich metadata. So I had forgotten back when WinJS apps were around, you could pin a site and have a live tile for that. And we had set that up for ourselves a long time ago and it looks like it pulls in all of this information for us. So we actually have a good portion of this manifest that's you've pre-built for us.
So already. We just converted to PWA live.
Live.
Do it live.
You know, the funny thing is because before a manifest, there was just tons of meta tags that we added to our sites for different platforms. So one of the things, one of our principles was as well, we want to try to do as much as this for you as possible. And so we actually go and we parse all the meta tags first. We find any images that we can reuse. We find descriptions and titles and those type of things and try to reuse them. And then if we can't find it there, then we start to dig into the page itself and we'll pull the title from the page. You know, we'll pull the languages from the page and stuff so that we can kind of pre-fill as much of that as we can. So trying to make life easy for you guys.
Very cool. Very cool. So ship it, Carl.
It's done.
Yeah. So I was watching a Pluralsight course on PWAs and they were talking about the 9 attributes of PWA. I don't know if you're familiar with these.
Yes.
So there's responsive, works offline, app-like, fresh, safe, discoverable, re-engageable, installable, linkable. So I guess I just wanted to ask, like, is that sort of a universally accepted list or did somebody just make that up or?
No, you know, and there's been a couple different like PWA sites that out there have kind of outlined these type of things. Here's my opinion though, and maybe I'm a little bit old school web here, but all of those are attributes of a good website, right? Like, yes, those are things that we do want to see inside of PWA. They're not things that are required to be a PWA, but they're just things that are good to have, like, they're just things you need to have a good experience for your users. So I strongly recommend that you are first a solid web app before you move into the progressive web app space. I don't know that, like, there's nothing magical about a progressive web app that it's going to take a crappy website and make it popular or make it better for your users.
Dang it, I was hoping.
Yeah. we're still missing that one attribute, you know, but so that's kind of where I the way that I approach this is like, you know what, let's do all of this stuff anyways. Don't tell me you're only going to be safe when you're progressed to a PWA. Just be safe all the time, right? Be responsive all the time. Work offline all the time. You know, don't wait for a scenario like an app space to do that. Just do it everywhere. But I would also say if you're missing anything on this list, you probably want to think twice before you go into an app space, because if you go into like a, you know, a store, or whether it's ours or Google's, and you put yourself up for user reviews and stuff, if you're missing any of those attributes, you're probably going to regret it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I build this really awesome PWA, you talked about how it could get auto sucked into the store. What if I, as an app developer, want to charge for my web app?
Yep.
What's that story look like?
Yeah. So we'll always continue to provide a channel for developers to be able to monetize their applications, or do things like, you know, push through the store. You can always be an Apex, right? And so if you're not the, like if you're auto indexed, we'll leave a way for you to take ownership of that application yourself. Okay, that's the there's never going to be a scenario where you as developer can't take control of that listing. You'll always be able to do that. Once you take control of that listing, you take ownership of that Apex, then you've got the control to customize the store listing page, and then, of course, change the monetization scenarios. So we'll have ways when we do index, although the web app manifest is made to be a signal that you are an app, not a website. So that's kind of what we're basing our discovery off of, is like we're only looking for sites that are out there publishing manifests saying that they are an app. But if for some reason you're still publishing your manifest and you don't want to be listed, we'll have mechanisms to say, no, don't list me in the store. And then you could just go to PWA Builder or Open Visual Studio or use Make Apex, create your own Apex and submit it to the store.
Okay.
And that way when you do that process, you're able to then create monetization channels. I've got a PWA that I'm working on that, I use in-app purchases. And that's kind of like the way that I'm monetizing it. So for me, auto discovery is not the way to go. I actually am in there in the store creating my my IAP entries, my in-app purchase entries, so that I can sell things through the store and make money off of it. No ads, it's just in-app purchase.
Okay.
So another thing that can be, you know, in today's app store environment for a mobile app developer that's, you know, a part of daily life is getting rejected from the store for some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Is there going to be quality standards that have to be hit before they'll get ingested?
So we've talked a lot about, treat PWAs differently than other apps because of the way that they're being collected. And, I think the consensus that I hear is that, no, they should be treated like an app. So in our store, we do have certain, like qualifications that you have to meet, certain standards that you have to reach to be in the store. So, for example, we will not index porn PWAs and put them in the store. We'll not index adult rating sites. We won't index, sites that sell, stuff that's not approved, and I'm not as familiar with the store policies, but whatever, we wouldn't approve in there. So, the same standards that's going to be for an application if you were a XAML or a native developer is the same level of, app that you're going to have is if you're a PWA.
Okay.
So is it if I generate an Apex today, I can run that inside of, the Windows application cert kit, which will run it through those store tests.
Will I be able to do that ahead of time with PWA as well, just to make sure that I know what's good and I know what's not working?
Yes. Yep.
Awesome.
So you can. One of the things that PWA Builder gives you, if you go and download the Windows package, there is a PowerShell script that you can run to sideload that application on any PC that is dev, you know, is in developer mode. Then you can run the Windows App Certification Kit against it. One of the things, too, that we're striving to do with PWA Builder is make sure that we are meeting everything that you would need to, so that basically you can know anytime you get an APEX from that, from us, it'll pass. So for example, in our preview channel, which is like the preview.pwabuilder.com, we've made changes to some of our icons, because some of the icons for the badge, like the lock screen badge on Windows, they're required to be white. And so that was, if they weren't white, they'd fail cert for people. And it would be really a bummer when we'd hear from developers, it's like, oh yeah, I did all this and then it failed cert because these images that you resized for me weren't right. So we have changes in the preview channel now to fix that for badge images. We're also looking now at like image sizes, because now that you can go to like 300% of the images, you know, your tile images on Windows, now you start to potentially run up against the image file size limit. And so we're trying to figure out, in fact, if we have any ASP.NET developers who want to volunteer to help us. Our image generator is ASP.NET, and we could use some help on that, because we're trying to figure out how to know whether the image file size is too large and then know what to do with it. If it is, you know, do we just make it smaller in more white space, or should we lower the resolution? We're not sure yet, but we want to make sure that basically whatever you build from us will pass WAC for you.
Okay. Very cool. Is there anything else that, you know, like Microsoft is working on that in this space that you can share with us?
So, you know, the web is changing all the time. And I can tell you, we've had a lot of excitement from the release of Edge on iOS and Android. Yeah. I think that has been a huge win for us. Developers are giving us great feedback there. They love to see us playing in multiple spaces. We have users who are now doing sync, you know, of like their bookmarks and passwords from their Android device into Edge on Windows. So I think that some of the stuff that's happening in that space and the ability to be using Edge on multiple devices and then having that sync into the timeline on your PC and the pickup where you went off and those type of things are really making an integrated experience with Windows, not just Edge, but with Windows that like you're not getting anywhere else. You know, I'm sad that, you know, Windows Phone is not a path forward anymore. I was a user for years, and I know many other folks are, but it's really cool for me to see the strategy of putting our apps on all those mobile devices like Edge, and then seeing it just kind of like magically work with the apps on my Surface and on my PC. It makes for some really exciting scenarios. There's opportunities to do some of that in the PWA space as well. So I think that, you know, we'll see some interesting stuff at play coming down the pipe.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you wanted to mention? Anything that we didn't ask you questions about?
Wow. I think we covered a lot. Okay. I probably talked too much for you guys, but
no, it's just the right amount.
I would say watch the Edge blog. We've got some news coming up as we're pushing new features into the Windows Insider builds. If you're not a Windows Insider, please find one of your machines and sign up for your Windows Insider builds, because that's where we're getting the majority of our feedback on these type of things, and we would love to get more of that from web developers. You know, keep your eye on PWA Builder, try it out yourself, and, you know, let me know if you have any questions.
Okay, so now what I need you to do is pick a number between 1 and 4 inclusive, and don't pick 3 because I think I'm out of 3s.
So it can't be 1.2?
It could. I'm going to round it, though. So if you pick 1.2, I'm going to pick 1.
All right, 1.
Okay. Let's see here. Okay. Would you rather chew gum from under a movie theater seat or eat half a hamburger you got out of the trash at McDonald's?
Definitely the McDonald's.
Yeah.
I've got something about gum. Like, I don't even like to re-chew my own gum. So,
yeah.
Definitely.
I don't know who does. Are there like, besides, I mean, are there people who do that? Like, they recycle their gum?
Yeah, my brother used to. He had a little thing called a gum saver. It was this little thing he had on his nightstand, and he'd take his gum out at night and put it on the gum saver, and it was disgusting. But listen, hamburgers are round, right?
Yeah.
Which means there's always going to be part of it that hasn't touched someone's mouth.
Yeah.
So you could totally just eat from the other side and pretend like it's a new hamburger.
So we just watched the old and new Willy Wonka's, and that's one of the characters in there. She re-chews her gum because she's got like a world record in gum chewing for like a single piece.
Yeah, she probably had a gum saver on her nightstand as well.
What? She stuck it behind her ear from in the movie.
Okay,
it's probably from a different generation, right? When gum was expensive and you didn't want to waste. I don't know.
Okay, pick a number, Carl.
I'll take 4.
Number 4. Here we go. For the rest of your life, would you rather choose the same drink and the same meal every time you eat, or have someone else always choose what you eat for you?
Bacon. There.
And what drink?
I'll choose bacon. I'll choose bacon.
And what, for the drink too?
Like, yes.
You can pick
more bacon.
You can pick a drink.
We'll just blend it.
And you're like bacon and bacon.
There we go. Problem solved.
I hate to go against the bacon, but I think the second answer actually makes a lot more sense, because the first one, you literally always have to eat the same thing. Okay. And bacon is good. But if somebody else chooses, like,
so it depends upon if I get to pick that person, really.
Well, yeah, it
so,
doesn't say, right? If it's
so,
if
so
it's,
I will
if
say
it's your
like,
worst
there's
enemy.
Some people, so there's like some people that we work with.
Yeah.
They're amazing at picking out food. Picking out, yeah, like really good. Like I would trust them way more than myself. But just like without knowing that, bacon.
Yeah. It's like,
so
it's
think
like a
about
personal
this.
Chef.
What if the other person also chose the same thing for every meal, but it was something that you didn't like?
Like,
I mean, that could really backfire.
Like anti-bacon.
Yeah.
What's the opposite
like,
of
you're
bacon?
Gonna have,
liver?
You're going to have applesauce.
Yeah, they have liver every meal.
Liver and applesauce every What's, meal for the
wait,
rest
whoa, whoa,
of your
whoa,
life.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You don't like applesauce?
Well,
not
I don't
the kind
like
that
applesauce
goes on liver.
Compared to bacon. I mean,
yeah, but you were like liver and applesauce as if they're in the same category.
But it's like the same thing. It's just not your favorite. Anything that's not your favorite would be less than eating bacon.
That doesn't make any sense. No, because liver is something I don't like. So for a drink, you'd have to pick like buttermilk.
Buttermilk.
Buttermilk okay. and liver. So,
buttermilk and liver for every meal. You better hope I'm not the one who gets to choose, because that's probably what I would pick for you.
Oh,
choose the
man.
Bacon. Choose bacon.
Yeah, I guess I am. I'm with Carl. Bacon to drink and okay. bacon to eat. Oh, man, that's hilarious. Okay, so Jeff, where can people find you?
Okay, I don't spend a whole lot of time on Twitter, but when I do, it's at Boy of Green. I guess it's going to be hard to find me. You can find me at you know, Microsoft.
Yeah. Just show up.
Yeah.
And ask for I'm Jeff.
when I'm not working at Microsoft, I actually live in South Texas. So, I spend a lot of time in the Texas Hill Country where we, wrangle cattle and, rope bulls and stuff like that.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
Very cool. Carl, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter, so you can find me on Twitter at Carl Schweitzer.
And I am Wrangling Bulls on twitter.com/ytechie. So, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on here and giving us the lowdown on PWAs.
Happy to talk to you guys anytime.